Thanks for listening to Last Call Confessions. This podcast is intended for adult audiences, and there may be language or references that some listeners may find disturbing. Guest views are their own and not necessarily reflective of the Last Call Confessions team. Discretion is advised. Welcome to this episode of Last Call Confessions. I'm one of your hosts, Austin Rieger, and today I'm joined by Lauren Serenko and Dave Erner. A little background on this episode is that Lauren decided she was going to try and convince our guest that she was British. She went as far as to complete all the phone calls with him prior to the interview in a British accent so that he wouldn't question it at all when she got on the show. Let us know how you think she did by shooting us a message on Instagram, at Last Call Confessions. Enjoy!
So, Kent Speakman is an innovator, producer, entrepreneur located in Los Angeles, California. He was born in Edmonton, Alberta, and started out in the entertainment industry at a local beach bar called Club Malibu. He's going to share with us today about how he got started and how he made his way to LA as an up-and-coming producer, including all the fun he had getting there. First, though, we are going to play a game of rapid fire, and we are going to go down memory lane with you by asking you a series of questions. Are you ready? All right.
Let's go.
All right, Kent, here we go. This is a little game called Would You Rather. Kent, would you rather have frosted tips for the rest of your life or the orange spray tan?
Orange spray tan.
Really?
Actually, after yesterday, let's go back to frosted tips.
You missed that.
Both of us. Absolutely. Would you rather drink Rev for the rest of your life or vodka slimes?
Ooh. Vodka slimes, I think. That's such an awful... Do they have booze in them, though, is the question.
That's the good question. I guess it depends on who's bartending.
That's an old school industry question there, Lauren.
Would you rather?
Fingers on the guns, right?
Hands in the air. Would you rather R&B or country music?
Country music.
All right. Would you rather pick up chicks with one smooth look or one slick pickup line?
One look.
All right.
What's that look? Blue steel?
It is. It's an advanced blue steel with a twist. There's a spinneroni at the end. I learned from Blue Garrison.
You just don't turn to the left, though, right?
Exactly.
Would you rather vodka soda cran or tequila soda pineapple?
Ooh, that's going to be probably the tequila now. That one's switched over the years.
would you rather denim on denim or a suit?
Depends on the day.
If you could only wear one for the rest of your life.
Denim on denim.
It's coming back. It is making a good look. I like it.
NSYNC or Backstreet Boys?
Backstreet all the way.
All right. Backstreet. And this one may be for Lauren, but how many dates before sex?
I wanted to know.
Can I switch that around? How much sex before the date?
I love it. All right. Here we go, you guys.
So, Kent, you worked at Club Malibu first. So how did you get started there?
So I actually used to work at Earl's and Joey's, and I was a dishwasher there, and then worked my way up and then started doing these things called NCOP parties, where we would bring in the VIPs from Edmonton. So I think Dave came through, and a guy named Mike Kaczynski, who owned Club Malibu at the time, and we had a little dinner for them, and then he said, why don't you throw a party at Malibu and start off with my store? And then I said, well, could we invite the other couple Joey's? This was back in 1998. And then a bunch of the people at Earl's found out they wanted to come. Before you knew it, I showed up at 8:30 at night and there was 300 people lined up waiting to get in. So he pretty much forced me to start bartending the next week.
So what was the bar scene like back then? I always hear like in the good old days. I'm like, what good old days? Like what happened back then?
if cut off jean shorts and frosted tips were to come back, you would have like absolutely loved it. Yeah, it was sort of like the Wild West. We won't name places or anything, but there's nightclubs you go to that you wouldn't act out of line because you'd end up in the back of a van bouncing around for a little while. But on the other side, it was a ton of fun. There weren't the rules and regulations that are probably pretty important today, but back then we definitely got to do a lot more out of the lines that we couldn't today.
Yes, it's lots of rules these days. Now there's even more rules. No fun. So when you think back to how you got started, what sticks out to you, or like what is the biggest like, oh my God, like what was I thinking back then?
Back to the frosted tips.
Was it the frosted tips?
It was mostly the frosted tips. There were
Did you have an orange tan to go with the tips and a denim on denim look with white sneakers?
Well, it was as natural of a tan as you could get in January in Edmonton. So
really orange, really orange.
Yeah, we had a lot of promos with the tanning salons and hairdressers to get that really nice white tip.
So like Fabutan's number one customer.
I think we had a partnership with Fabutan for a while.
Oh, you were big supporters, investors, some would say.
I think we still have some of those minutes kicking around somewhere.
Really? I need some. I love it. I'd love to have a nice tan on.
So, Ken, I want to hear about when you got to LA. How did that go about? How did LA come about? And then what were things like when you arrived? Like, I have no idea what it would be like to be this Edmonton guy that just picks up and runs away and goes and starts this brand new crazy life. So walk us through it.
Well, I was carefully how I'm saying this, but I was at a wedding and I got dumped by my girlfriend that I lived with. Pretty much decided to fly home and pack my suitcase and just come back. So that's what I did. Ended up living in an Airstream on the beach for the first 3.5 months, which if you don't know what an Airstream is, it's the big like aluminum trailer that like Lenny Kravitz lived in for a while. And so kind of just moved down here and had this like surfer lifestyle, and I didn't surf. I was embarrassed to tell anybody. Meanwhile, now they like rent out for like $2,000 a day for those experiences. But yeah, I lived in an Airstream, and then I had left everything. So my car was still in Alberta. And I came down here to do this startup, and the company vehicle we had was a smart car with logos on it. And if you want to talk about a contraceptive in LA, drive that around.
Hey, you don't even need a condom or birth control.
Yeah, because nobody's getting in that thing.
No.
Yeah, definitely.
You can't rendezvous in there. No, no, no.
So how do you go from, you know, living in an Airstream and rocking a smart car to actually being able to start building your networks and making the moves that you've made?
Well, I was lucky. Actually, a lot of the relationships that I had from back in the Cowboys days kind of parlayed in. And so I didn't know a lot of people, but I knew a half dozen people that were down here that were, I guess, more in the celebrity arena. So not the type of people I could call and ask to crash on their couch, but would definitely come and hang out and go for drinks. And so I just started building my network and ended up in the pool at the Roosevelt and swam up and ended up next to these girls that were sitting there. And they were also both from Toronto, became friends. And then one happened to be a big club promoter, and so she started introducing me to a lot of people. The other was, I don't know if it was that year, but Cover of Maxim and doing a bunch of other stuff. So became friends with them and then kind of just started meeting people and kind of grew from there. So
I'm really interested. How have your pickup lines been going to LA since Girls Give It Up?
I was hoping that wasn't going to come up.
Oh, I heard about it. Please enlighten everyone on what Girls Give It Up is first.
Well, it was.
It
was a DVD series that we did back in Alberta. And I think there was maybe a couple other locations, but we had girls giving guys dating advice. It wasn't me giving guys dating advice, which was the misconception a lot of people had. It was actually the women telling guys what they needed to know, because being in the bars so much, you would see all of the worst of everybody trying to use pickup lines and just failing miserably. So we came up with these DVDs back in like 2000 and was that 2001, Dave, or somewhere in there? 2002?
where, I guess the question is, where can somebody in this day and time find one of those DVDs?
I'm sure hoping that that's not somewhere in that garage full of stuff that you were showing me earlier, Dave, because I'm hoping that the one place that they were is never going to come to light of day.
What is a good pickup line? Like, let's hear it. Like, what's like one that you're like, yes, that's the winner?
Well, I think actually when I moved here, all of those guys that wrote all those books also like moved to LA, and not that I was one of those guys that wrote one of those books, but those guys that wrote those books all have like these camps here. And I actually ended up like meeting a couple of them, and you see them going around. They fly all these nerds in from all over the world, and these guys pay like 10 or 20 grand to hang out with these guys for like a week and learn how to pick up girls. And they do all these like all the different techniques and try these lines, and they take them out to bars and stuff. So if anything, pickup lines are like the worst thing to do here in LA, because anything that's like possibly been done before, there's all these douchebags teaching other guys try to be douchebags to use them. And so it's usually like the fastest way to have a back turned on you or somebody walk away.
So don't do pickup lines.
No, it's back to the look.
The look. I haven't heard a good pickup line in forever. I'm itching for one. I just really want one. Maybe because of COVID, no one can come up and talk to me. So I'm just like, now I want the cheesy one. Like, oh my God, did you fall from heaven? And I'll be like, yes, I did.
You'll fall for anything right now.
I would literally fall for whatever they gave me.
So the Girls Give It Up DVDs, would that be your first little foray into producing?
It would be up there in the first commercially available products that
I would love to see it. I'd love to see your work.
So what made you love the entertainment industry so much that you decided that was what you wanted to do with your life?
I kind of always had, like, since I was a little kid, when I was probably 7 or 8, my parents bought a little camcorder and we used to go like film things and, create little videos, and all through high school and stuff, I was always doing it. And there's actually like a huge, sort of parlay or, relationship between hospitality and entertainment and a lot of the same values and things that, I know you guys love giving people an experience, and Dave says it best and has so many times, it's leaving people with memories that they'll take with them forever. And so entertainment has the ability to do that same kind of thing, and leave people with a memory or change their perspective or, just give them a different thought than they've ever had. And I think that that's probably the most exciting part about it, is being able to leave people with that spark of change and, hopefully for good.
I want to hear about the LA lifestyle. For me, like I'd been there once, Dave took me, and it was a crazy 24 hours. We did Beaker's Madhouse and bounced around there and then ripped home. So I got the quick experience, but I want to hear about your craziest 24 hours that you can remember, because you've had a lot more experiences down there than I have, for sure.
Crazy. There's been a few, but it was probably I can't remember what year it was, but it was a Grammy weekend. And I got a call from one of the owners of One Oak, and she said, come, don't bring anybody. Like, I don't care who you're dating, show up by yourself. Nobody else is getting in. And so it was Diddy and Jay-Z were throwing a big party. And so she's like, okay, come in with the Canadian guys. So I ended up walking in with Drake, and it was the craziest party with like everybody you can imagine. Ended up back at one of Jay-Z's houses and ran into some old hockey players and our old friends from Edmonton, had a bit of fun that would get me in trouble if I said too much more.
That's 100% fair.
I love how they're like, walk in with a Canadian and you're like, okay, I'll Drake, come on.
Yeah, just happens to be Drake. That's how he's known, the Canadian.
Yeah. The Canadian, yeah.
So the parties down there, obviously, like, from what I see from the outside, there are just different levels of party, right? It's you've got the like fresh to LA parties all the way up to those like A-list One Oak, Jay-Z, and Diddy parties. What's the like pecking order and how you get up there and get invited to those parties?
So you're a hot chick or you're not.
Fair.
And that pretty much sums it up. no, it's... Yeah, it comes down to a lot to relationships. And like, I think it comes back to, you know, the question earlier about like, how do you become successful in a new place or something? It's like, if you're asking yourself, what can you do for somebody else all the time versus in this place, it's like, what's this person going to do for me? And it becomes just so blaringly obvious that everybody's looking for what can they get out of you? So they don't really go too far. But if you approach all the relationships and the people you meet with, like, what can I actually do to provide this person value or give them something back in life? It allows you to progress up the social ladders, if you will, a little bit faster. Like, for example, the way that it works here, and I know it's kind of changed a bit in Canada, but I haven't really been up and gone out, and other than coming back and coming to like Cowboys reunion parties or the Stampede, it's there's promoters and like different sort of levels of how the clubs and stuff work. So primarily it's the promoters get to bring girls in for free. They get paid for the girls they bring, and then they get free drinks for them. And then guys come and they pay like $5,000 to $10,000 or more to be at those tables. And so that's kind of how the system works in that sense, unless you're friends with the promoters or the owners, and then you're able to just get kind of invited, and which is really not something that I've seen a ton of, for somebody that's not like on a lead on an HBO show or something. I guess that's kind of how it works. And then it's just, you know, coming back to like providing value and doing something for everybody you meet in a way that's like not expected to be transactional, but just genuinely being nice, and then more doors open up, and then you end up back at Jay-Z's or
probably comes right back to the pickup lines too then, right? With, you know, just being a genuine person gets you a hell of a lot further down there than trying to fake it.
Yeah, exactly. Especially like, I don't know. And that's the funny part. I've introduced myself to people that were like, you guys would know exactly who they are, just genuinely, versus like trying to say something stupid. And that's the most authentic way to build those relationships. So.
If you like what you're hearing, please don't forget to give us a rating and write a review on your favorite podcast streaming platform. It helps us out a ton and allows us to keep producing great content. While you're at it, make sure to check us out on Instagram at Last Call Confessions and give us a follow for all the up-to-date info on the podcast.
So you seem to have got to work with quite a few celebrities on some projects. Which one has stood out to you the most, would you say?
There's been a lot of exciting ones. I think probably the most exciting moment was when we were doing the Daytime Emmys on, I started a TV network called Connect TV, and we were doing the Daytime Emmys, and Mario Lopez, who I used to watch on Saved by the Bell, walked out on stage, and I didn't know, I hadn't seen the writing for the show. And so we opened the show up with thanking everybody for watching on Connect, which was a pretty cool moment. But then getting to work with, like doing Kygo's music video was also pretty cool. And then I had a moment where I was actually working with Jay Shetty, and I was at his house, his penthouse. And, I had this other guest was coming on, and I'd been back and forth on email, and I recognized like the name sounded familiar, but I just assumed it was the same, name as this other guy that I knew. And I used to have this manager back at Joey's in Edmonton when I was like first starting, 17 years old. His name was Todd Herman. And so I was back and forth with his whole team. And then finally I needed something from Todd directly. And he emailed me, can I swear on this show? I don't know.
Oh, you can say fuck. You can say whatever yeah. You bloody want.
And so I get this email back from Todd. He's like, Kent fucking Speakman, what? So it was actually Todd that used to be my manager back when I was a 17-year-old dishwasher. And Todd's become a big leadership coach around the world. And so he was coming to do this live show that I was producing at Jay's penthouse. And so it was kind of this really cool sort of full circle moment where going from being the dishwasher with my manager giving me advice to now producing, you know, we were live to 27 million people. So, yeah, it was a pretty cool experience in that sense.
That's super cool.
That's amazing. So what for you so far is the biggest accomplishment on a project or charity that you have worked on, would you say?
Well, I think the first one that we did was the Make-A-Wish Power of a Wish Gala. And so that was, I'd seen this, I'd been to these events here, and there was a ton of big fundraisers where people were, you know, it was the first big one I went to, his name's escaping me, but like Jennifer Aniston was presenting, and Bruno Mars was performing, and like all this stuff, and there's so much money being raised, and nobody other than the people in the room was seeing it. So I sort of took that model of the awards show and applied it to these charity galas. So we started doing red carpets, all the interviews with everybody, and then doing like the coverage and live streaming of these concerts and benefits, and then had the ability for people to bid on items from home. So this was the Power of a Wish Gala in New York. Nigel Barker was hosting it. We had 1,000 people in the room, 44,000 people at home watching, donating and bidding on the items. And the show, that was the first show I ever did that there was like not a tiny little mess up the entire show. And then that year, I think we raised $1.3 million that night. And then it continued to grow. The last year we did it, it was with Tina Fey hosting. And then we did it, a smaller version of it, sort of similar to this, where Nigel and everybody called in on Zoom and we pushed it out to Facebook and YouTube and everything else. And I think it was only, it was like 35 minutes and we raised just, or I don't know if this has been announced, but about $250,000. I don't know if that's public or not, but so working with Make-A-Wish has been sort of a big, exciting on the charitable side. But we did just finish another really cool one called Endangered Rangers with Josh Duhamel hosting. And we had Don Felder from the Eagles playing Hotel California, and a bunch of other, Dave Matthews played and Jordan Sparks. And so that was a really cool one that we just did it recently as well.
Kent, you and I have traveled, you know, you say Mexico or Cancun, you know, we've been to Daddy-O's and Coco Bongo and Daddy Rock. You know, we've been to Vegas. We've been, you know, to Tao or Trist or Excess and Hakkasan, and we've done all the big clubs in the world. But tell our listeners, you know, what can you tell our listeners about your experiences inside the Cowboy Stampede tent?
Oh, what, there's a lot I could tell, but what is legally compliant and not
gonna... what stands out for you?
Illegal or not illegal?
Now you've worked there. You've worked there, and you've been a customer there.
So as a customer, and this kind of goes back to the question about like before, what were things like? It was like the trip of the summer. It would be driving from Edmonton down to Calgary for the opening weekend at the Cowboy Stampede tent, and then trying to be able to make it back home to lick your wounds for the week. And then if you were able to actually come back the second weekend. So that was what it was like. And I actually have a funny story. And I was partying with Dave and all the guys in Calgary. And this was, I still lived in Edmonton. And I was driving home and it was, I'm trying to say this politely. I really needed to use the bathroom. And so I pulled into one of those little rest stops. And I was so hungover and just feeling like I'd partied for 3 days at Stampede. And the men's was closed and I really needed to use the bathroom. So I went into the ladies, and then a tour bus filled of senior citizens pulled up, and there were no less, I don't know, 25, it felt like 300, but there's probably 25 senior citizen women, and they're banging on the door. Are you okay, sweetie? Is everything okay in there? And so I had to just ride that out until the bus left. And my poor friend that was waiting in the car was going, what the heck's going on? But that was what it was like to be a customer. And that was just like a regular sort of run of the mill day going to Cowboys Stampede. Managing it was a whole nother level. I think it was a lot like doing, you know, a big live award show. And, you know, it's like crazy, crazy prep and everything leading up to it, barely sleeping going into it, and then just madness. The good thing with the award shows is they're usually 1 or 2 days, but you guys have 8 more to go. So I guess I've actually brought a couple of people that worked in the industry who've come down, and they worked on Daytime Emmys with me last year. And as we're getting set up, they were saying the same thing, how similar it was to opening up or doing Stampede or something like that. And so it was, yeah, a lot of really cool things that I learned from that parlayed into this. But I without getting any of us into trouble, I don't know which other stories.
You can get into lots of trouble.
Oh, we sure could.
We just want to take a minute to acknowledge all of our listeners from around the world. Currently, we have people listening from Canada, United States, Costa Rica, Australia, United Kingdom, Mexico, Belgium, Greece, Germany, Sweden, the Netherlands, and the United Arab Emirates. From all of us at Last Call Confessions, thank you for making us part of your day.
What's the most troublesome story you did?
That is a good one. Dave, I don't know. There was a weekend that we went. I think it was Darcy's brother's bachelor party, if I remember correctly. Oh, God. Back Cowboys Edmonton. So many things I'm not sure if I should say. We ended up, there was, I don't know. At some point, I think somebody was about to punch one of each of us. And like, somebody's going to punch Erner. And I don't know if it was me that knocked, like, it just got turned into this crazy brawl. We ended up after going to this, there was a rave that happened. And then we were back. I think we ended up at Dave's house. And then this was back when Rev had just kind of come out. Mike was having a beach day. And so we all decided to go straight to the beach after partying all the way through the night before. And I don't know where the wigs came from, but we had some wigs on. Darcy had his topless Jeep, and we were driving out to what lake was that day? Was that Pigeon or?
Pigeon Lake. Yeah, we'd end up at Pigeon Lake.
Yeah, but we did miss a turn. And so I'm like, Darcy, the rest of the guys are way over there. And it was on the other side of like this cattail filled like swamp. And he's like, oh, shit. And he just turned and went straight through it like full speed. And luckily there was no logs or small creeks or anything else that we ran over. But that was the start of the beach day. Yeah, it was fun. And I think we came back that night and ended up at Senior Frogs the next day. So
Mexico.
No, there used to be a Senior Frogs in Edmonton, but it would have been way more fun if we ended up in Mexico. That happened once. Dave and I went to Vegas, and then I think he broke up with his girlfriend while we were in Vegas, and we were flying back, and it was Valentine's Day, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, you didn't want to be alone.
Oh, this is a good one. I completely forgot about this. So I had gone to Vegas with Dave and a bunch of the guys for the nightclub and bar convention, I was 19 at the time. And it's 21 in Vegas. And I think it's statute of limitations. It's been 20 years. I can't get in trouble for this, I hope. I had a fake ID made so that I could go and get into all of the clubs and everything in Vegas. Flew back, and this was obviously before like 9/11 or any of the other crazy stuff that happened with flying. So I came back, no problem. But on the way back, David said he'd broken up with his girlfriend, and he's like, supposed to go for Valentine's Day next weekend. Do you want to go to Cancun? And I was like, done, let's go. So I forgot the fact that like you might need identification to get into a foreign country. I'd never been to Mexico before. And I show up and I had thrown my ID out because I didn't want to get in trouble coming back from Vegas with like a fake ID coming back into Canada. So I end up somehow getting to Mexico and I have no ID and I'm in the airport at Cancun. And I was 19. I pulled out like all my cash for this trip. And I get up to the window and the guy's asking for my ID. And I think I had my secondary ID, which was also something that we made in the basement at Club Malibu for the Vegas convention, was my Malibu staff card, which didn't actually exist as a real thing. So I showed this to the immigration guy in Mexico. And he's like, what is this? And I'm like, well, this is all the ID I have. This is my birth certificate. And he's like, well, we can't accept this. And I was like, well, what am I supposed to do? And he's like, well, you can wait here until there's a flight that takes you home. And I was like, well, is there anything else I could do? And he's like, no. And I said, are you sure there's not like a fine I could pay with this cash to be able to come into the country for not having proper ID? And he said, well, take this paperwork, roll that up in the bathroom, and then come back over it and like slide it under the desk and I'll stamp you. And so I get into Mexico. I paid off. I gave all my money I had for the trip. I don't know. I can't remember. I showed up like, I think something happened with the flights. So these guys had like thought I was gone or dead or something. I'm supposed to get there at 4 o'clock. I land at 10:30. I get to the hotel. There's no cell phones. Like there's nothing back then. And somehow, I don't even know how we got in touch, but I got there. I had no money. And Dave bailed me out, and it was probably one of the most fun trips I've ever had.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but was that a trip where you may or may have not worked for Maxim Magazine?
That might have been one of the trips where I worked for Maxim Magazine before I actually did work for Maxim Magazine. That was, I think I was more of a, I was a sheep farmer back then, if I remember correctly.
Yes, blowing bubbles in the waves, if I remember correctly, too.
Yes, it was, we had a lot of fun thinking that we'd met some wonderful ladies from South America, and I assume they didn't speak English, so I was, what's the word, self-deprecating? and I was just making fun of myself the whole time, and then when it came time to possibly use a pickup line, that was dead in the water because she thought that I had sex with sheep for a living.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know how you can come back from that.
So she obviously spoke English.
Yeah, which we found out like 7 hours later.
And they're probably just loving listening to this, thinking that they don't speak English.
After There's that.
No, yeah, recovery line for that, no.
No, I don't think so. But that sounds fun, a little romantic getaway to Mexico.
We had separate rooms.
So I have a question. If someone like Lauren was looking at moving to LA to try her hand at acting,
oh,
what would be your advice for her?
She looks like she's so serious about that. The big thing is to get your credits and get some experience in Canada first. And that's something that like I actually, I've worked with a lot of like up and coming talent and stuff. And we actually have two different talent shows that we produce. One is we work with a lot of youth and Disney stars to get them into like starting and launching their careers.
A talent show?
Yeah. And then
I can do the splits.
Perfect. It's not that kind of talent show, but we could see if we can fit you in somewhere.
Well,
splitting there.
Can I sing? No, I've been working on my Canadian accent, though. Is it good?
About a boot.
I mean, what else can you say?
Yeah, the biggest thing is just like hone your skills at home and then come down with a bit of a resume because it's tough. A lot of people just come and want to start.
What should I put on my resume?
I would just say friend of Dave Earners, and that'll open a lot of doors.
So friend of Dave's, I can do the splits. I can do a Canadian accent. I can do an American accent. I can do Texas.
I think you're qualified to do Audi.
What else can I do? I can't sing. I could promote.
There you go. You could be the multilingual promoter split girl.
You can do a British accent.
Did I do a good job?
I think you got it down.
I'm not from Britain. I'm a wannabe.
Where are you from, Lauren?
Calgary, Alberta. Born and raised, family. But yeah.
Lauren decided she wanted to be British for the entire interview. So.
Mm-hmm. Did I do a good
job? Came up recently.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was great.
Did you know?
She said she committed enough that she did it on a phone call with you earlier too.
I know. That was pure commitment. I was like, I didn't recognize that.
So now I feel like I can be an actress. Just hire me for Game of Thrones is done. But if there's a reboot, I'd really love a crown on my head.
And she can do the splits. So I'm sure someone will be able to make that work.
We get the fur on. You can go for Vikings season 48.
Okay. We'd like to really find Lauren her own TV show. Kent.
Produce me. That sounded wrong. That sounded so dirty. I think I'd thrive in reality TV. I've been trying to get on The Bachelor. Like, what are some advice? Like, what some tips? Should I write down splits as a hobby? Sarah says no.
I would. Just move to LA and just go on Instagram, and you'll probably get hit up to be on The Bachelor like at least 7 times before they stop asking.
Until I stop asking.
No, if you ask, then they don't ask you. You have to pretend you don't want it.
Oh, right. I'm
it's kind of like dating in general in LA. Yeah, you have to pretend you don't want it, and then it's like they won't.
I have to play hard to get. Like, I'm so busy these days.
I do have a legitimate question for you here, Kent. How have things changed because of COVID down there? Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. Really appreciate it, and getting to hear a little bit more and getting to see you for the first time in 10 years.
It was so nice meeting you, Kent.
You too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Last Call Confessions. It would mean the world to us if you could make sure to give us a 5-star rating and a review on your favorite podcast streaming platform, as well as give our Instagram page at Last Call Confessions a follow. Don't forget, if you have a great party story you know we need to hear, make sure to DM us for the chance to have your story featured on an upcoming episode.